Yes. What's going on, everybody? Welcome to episode 53 of the Sports Card Strategy Show. We've got a lot going on today. Excited to talk to you about a lot of different stuff. How's my audio, guys? Can you guys hear me?
It sounds bad.
A little crackly. Give me a second here. Let me try to fix this. I don't know what's going on. Audio settings. Test, test. Check 1, 2, 3. That seems better. I don't know what was going on. Yesterday,
like
I was
you
doing
had like a cartoon character sitting with you.
I think it's my literally just my plug on my microphone.
Might be
a little crackly. Yesterday, I got intense with Andy on the Football Card Strategy Show and yanked it out. So now I think it's mad at me. But anyway,
yeah, I would be.
Happy to be here talking sports cards with you guys today. Sports Card Strategy Show.
Your face is cracking me up.
52. And I don't know why my face is so huge. What is going on? Technical difficulties. Like my camera's messed up. This is ridiculous.
Well, we haven't done like three people on the show in a while, so it's throwing it off.
When we did, it wasn't this weird. Anyway, who knows? Let's get into it. I got a question to ask the audience, and that is, why vault your cards with the original marketplace? It's because the eBay vault isn't just a way to protect what you collect. It's a new way to trade. Not only have your cards never been safer thanks to our secure climate-controlled facility, but you're also locking in real savings. You pay no sales tax when you ship to or transact within the vault, and there are no storage fees for 2 years. Now just imagine everything you can do with all that money. And with eBay Vault's seamless in-app experience, you can track, buy, and sell your cards in real time. From listing your cards in seconds with eBay Collection to tracking trends with eBay Price Guide, managing your collection is more seamless than ever before. The eBay Vault, buy, sell, secure. Gentlemen, eBay Vault time. And I got my L of the week is related to a vault service. So anyway, but we have a guest today, and we also have Kendall McKee is my co-host. I haven't even introduced him yet. Kendall McKee, who you loyal audience members already know as you're staring at my giant face,
just back up.
Is with Wild Cards Box Breaks and justbaseball.com and nooffseason.com. And here's his giant face. I was on a Zoom call right before this, and I think that Zoom and StreamYard must not like each other. I'm gonna blame the two technologies. So VJ Patel, what up? Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Lefty says, VJ? Lefty McKee, what up? All right. Leiden Sipe, I think I'm saying your name correctly. Kendall, why don't you introduce our guest and why he's here with us today? And then we'll get into we're going to do L of the week and W of the week. And then we're just going to talk to Leiden for the rest of the time, if that's cool with you guys.
Yeah. So Leiden is a very, very, very dear friend of mine. We've known each other for, gosh, the better part of 10 years now, which is over a third of my life. And we have owned businesses together. We've gone to school together. Our wives are friends. So it's like we've done a lot of life together. But one of the smartest dudes I know and very, very patient when it comes to watching market cycles and things like that. So when he does have a trend towards sports cards, he's interested and invested, I guess, if you will. But he has a particular affinity for like this way that sports and culture kind of intersect and how businesses are involved in that. He particularly has studied the history of currency, which is pretty unique. I don't know anyone else that's ever done that. And so, Leiden, I'll just give you the floor from there if you want to give us a short little blurb before we go into L and Wins of the Week.
Sounds good. I'll just give a little history of how I got involved with sports cards. So growing up, I would always go to the sports card shows with my dad. We had a local shop that we would attend. And it's a funny story with me and my dad. The second day I was alive, he handed me, and I reached out, of course, for a second day I was alive, dad got me started investing. So way to go, dad. So that's how I grew up, is just me investing stock market, just setting aside money that I didn't need and just enjoying that camaraderie with him. And sports cards, like I said, were a natural flex for that of extra money we had. His team is the Cincinnati Reds, big red machine.
Is he Red Stockings.
All those big boys. So it's just an enjoyable childhood growing up, just investing in sports cards with my dad. So some of my history with that.
Awesome.
Remembering the second day that you were alive, that's interesting. I definitely don't remember the second day that I was alive.
That's the intelligence level we're looking for on this show, Paul.
Yeah, we need more intelligence, obviously, since you can't even see what my hair looks like right now. It's just literally like my eyes, nose, and mouth. But anyway,
that DC supervillain mastermind or Megamind or whatever, where it's just his head is just like this big.
What is up with StreamYard right now? I'm just going to blame them. Anyway, enough about this, because the people listening on Apple and Spotify probably don't really care what we're talking about. But we wanted to have the reason why Kendall invited Lydon on the show today is because I've been just absolutely questioning why people are so negative on the sports card investing right now in terms of the market, but also B, I guess two separate issues. B is the same people are sort of investing in sports cards like long-term stocks, and I just don't believe that that's smart. So what I mean by that specifically is they're looking at like what cards can they set and forget, which typically translates into vintage. And so I think that's where Kendall wanted to have Lydon on today. So Kendall and I are going to do our L of the week and our W of the week just to kind of make this seem like a normal sports card strategy show. We're in episode 52. This has been a weird week because I'm sorry, it's episode 53. I think I got that wrong.
Paul,
you know what, Kendall?
I'm fired up
so many times today. This is episode 52. But what I did was I scheduled episode 53 in StreamYard today for Monday.
There you go.
Because it's normally on Monday.
There you go.
So I showed the episode 53 graphic at the beginning, which is amazing because it's not episode 53. It's episode 52. Let's go. So I'm all kinds of messed up this week. We're doing it on Friday. We normally do it on Monday. I was traveling on Monday for a stupid reason that I won't even discuss on this show because it's irrelevant. Let's just say it's related to me moving back to the United States. So anyway, my L of the week, other than the fact that I just absolutely have sucked this entire episode, is the collector's vault. I just wanted to, like, I mentioned this on the show before, and I just want to show you guys what this collector's vault looks like compared to the PWCC vault. So we talked about the eBay vault at the beginning of the show, which I'm super excited about. I really am. But the collector's vault, let's just take a look here. This is what you get in the collector's vault. So after like a week of them having shipped it to your vault, you finally get the picture of the front and back of the card, which is like the bare minimum that you should get. And it's a good looking
card. That card is sick.
Thank you. We've talked about this card on the show. This is the Max Muncy out of 50 gold shimmer refractor. Auto, of course. I bought this, I think, on an episode of the show, like at the end. So
I believe you did.
Here's what sucks about it. You can't ship it to anyone but return to me. And if you do this before 90 days of the item having been in the vault, you're subject to a fulfillment fee of 3% of the item value, which for a card like this could be huge. So to me, this is an L because you've got the eBay vault, which is going to do a way better job of this kind of thing. And then you've got the PWCC vault. Let's compare the experiences here. Let's pull up the Jordan pool that our boy Chase Krim sold me at the National for $300, and then I had it graded, and it's a PSA 10. Chase didn't.
That's such a cool card.
It would gem, but it did. So this card, as you can see, like, first of all, when you see your entire vault screen, they give you an insured value, which gives you an idea of what this card would sell for.
Yeah.
And then, and they give you like more information about the card, like what the PSA population count is and all this stuff. You can, of course, list it on their marketplace. But what I like about it is I can sell it anywhere, and then all I have to do is click ship. So when I ship it, it gives me the ability, it can default send it to myself, but I can send it to an alternative address. So this is where I could, when I sell this card on eBay, I can put in whoever's address buys it from me, right? And then I check out and it gets shipped and it gives me a tracking number right there. So then I can put the tracking number into eBay. So the PWCC vault, now compared to the, and I haven't used the eBay vault that I've been touting so much, but my assumption is that it's way better than this collector's vault, because again, this collector's vault, like, you can sell it on the on golden auctions or on the collector's marketplace, which just seems super limited. It's just a buy now type thing. Or you can just ship it to yourself, which point is, this is not what I thought it was. And it's, I don't think it's going to save me the money that I thought it was going to save me, because essentially what I'm going to do is just ship these cards back to myself once I get into the United States. And then I'm going to either ship them to my PWCC vault or sell them on eBay and ship them. So, that's my L of the week. And, you guys can comment or give me your L of the week. Or you can laugh in my face.
I just can't get over looking at your nose the entire episode. There you go. Yeah. Just like some mysterious, like, you could also do like the one from Home Improvement where you could just be your eyeballs.
You know what? We're going to get crafty. This is a solution. I'm taking my microphone out of the holder and I'm physically moving back from my camera, because this is ridiculous. This is absolutely, this is the worst I've ever seen.
This is Lyden, do you have an L of the week? Or, you know, do you want me to just launch into mine?
I think it's launch into yours. I don't have an L of the week.
All right. My L of the week has been, I think, just a general L of the week. Aaron Judge in the playoffs has been abysmal. He has disappeared for this Yankees offense. And so I think an L of the week for just people in general is, if you did not listen to me/us over the past month of like, get out of your Aaron Judge cards, get out of your Aaron Judge cards, you're probably in bathwater, especially if you bought recently, because this man has like a 125 average in the Houston series. And I think overall in 2022 specifically, I mean, he's hitting under 200. He's got one home run, I believe. No, two, but they both came in Cleveland, in the Cleveland series. He's just not playing well. He's not being what the Yankees expected him to be, which honestly I'm okay with, because I don't want the Yankees to win the World Series. But I'm rooting for Judge. And right now it's just like, I'm rooting for anybody in the National League, to be honest. You know, like the Yankees and the Astros are two of my least favorite franchises on the planet. So an L of the week also for me is that we got, you know, these two behemoths in the American League and in the American League coming down to the end. Another L of the week is there are some significant Tops issues. Like, we saw this. I mean, like, there's been Tops issues for a while now, but it pretty much since the pop of 2020, Tops has gone back and forth with just biffing stuff in regards to their product. But here recently we've gotten even more issues. We had the Topps Chrome that we talked about a couple weeks ago, but even now they're marking platinum boxes. Like, if you have like I've seen a couple of packs that have red marks on it, and then you open them and they have like a double dual Julio Rodriguez a Marte auto. Like, you know, that's just the quality control is getting abysmal. Then you have all the stuff going on with Panini and Backyard Breaks. You know, I don't have any thoughts on that, but I just know that like quality control in our business right now is under an extreme microscope. And I think that does nothing but create speculation, which so an overall L for the hobby is that there's just a bunch of quality control issues right now. And I'm just hoping that they can figure that out.
Yeah, that's too bad. Chad Gill is chiming in with his L of the week. What up, Chad? He was my kind of semi co-host yesterday when Andy was late for the football card strategy show yesterday. Chad's L is he just got back a 15 card order full of Dodgers rookie cards, anticipating them to get to the World Series. Oops, LOL. He says, yeah, that's, you know, sometimes you make a, you know, you make a bet, right? You made a bet on the Dodgers. Not a bad bet. Just didn't go your way. But the good thing about cards is this isn't a FanDuel or a DraftKings bet that you lost in your SOL. You know, you still got the cards, right? So Kendall, I would assume that as long as these are like Bowman Chrome firsts or Bowman firsts or something, or even like decent.
It looks like it's rookie cards. So it's probably Topps related.
Dodgers Topps rookie cards obviously aren't going to go for as much, but you could still try to sell them in April when everyone's hype about baseball.
Yeah. I mean, I think it just depends on the player, just like all the other cards. But if it's Trey Turner or. Trey Turner is probably going to sign a massive contract this offseason. I've seen some predictions saying that he's going to go to the Giants, which would be really interesting. But Trey Turner is going to be great. If you got a guy like Max Muncy, rookie, like that's okay. But if you're getting guys like Freddie Freeman or even Kershaw, I know we don't talk about pitchers, but there's guys that somehow supplant some of that stuff, like him and Verlander and could probably be okay investments, even though they're not going to be you're not going to have as much of a winning margin as you would somebody like Trey Turner if you had gotten a cheap rookie. So
that was a good few L's of the week. My W of the week is basically, you know, since this is episode 52, it's technically like 1 year worth of episodes. A couple notes, and thanks to VJ for asking if this is our 1 year anniversary. So this is like, you know, our 52nd episode, which denotes 52 weeks in a year, and we are a weekly show. So it is, that counts for something. It is a milestone. It's not technically Kendall and I's anniversary. That'll come sometime maybe in March when we started doing the shows together. Before that, it was just kind of a mix of things. But the first episode, since we've taken some weeks off, was actually in September. So there's really nothing notable about today. Today's just kind of screwy, you know, other than Leiden being on. But we'll take that as a W from VJ. My other W of the week is a prediction I made. I didn't actually act on this, so it wasn't like, it's not like a real W in terms of me being able to cash in personally, but Kendall, do you remember me talking during the NCAA tournament about this Paolo Banchero card by any chance?
Uh-huh.
And how, I don't know if I said I almost bought it. I think I actually did almost buy it, and I think I said that on the show. And the reason why was more to sell it during the NBA draft.
Yeah, I remember us talking about that.
But what's interesting to me, I wanted to bring this up because I think this is a relevant W for the hobby. And again, this is actually going to be a good segue, I think. I know you're going to have a W, but I think it'll be a good segue into the conversation that we're about to have with Leiden, because this is kind of an example of what I'm talking about. Like, you can make money if you're smart. Like, this is an example of the way to make money. So Panini had this Panini instant release on the web only of Paolo's first auto, and it was licensed with Duke. And so that's different because a lot of times collegiate cards are not licensed. And so you'll get like a blank jersey without the college logo. It can't say Duke University, that kind of thing. But this card stood out to me at the time. And again, it came out in March during the NCAA tournament as a card that you could go buy, I think, for $400, which is not cheap. But it had a couple different ways to make money on it. One was the NBA draft. And I don't know that it spiked actually during the NBA draft. It may have. But thanks to Slab Stocks for this graphic in their daily Slab email, this one's up 75%. And it's the exact card that I was going to buy that I mentioned could be a play on our show. So W of the week, I guess, for us in how we think creatively about how you can make money. And the thing I like about this Paolo card is it's performance-based. He had a great debut game. He did not beat my Pistons, but he had a great debut game against the Pistons, putting up some amazing stats and kind of dominating more than a number one overall pick normally would in their first game, I think. And so he drew some attention, and his card's up 75%, this auto. Panini Instant Duke University Auto Sticker Auto. It's up to $2,100 now. So I just wanted to bring this up because, you know, I think these are the types of plays that you have to pay attention to make money in sports card investing, not necessarily like the set it and forget it vintage stuff. I think that's actually riskier, but we're going to talk about that here in a second. Kendall, do you have a W of the week, or Leiden, do you have a W of the week?
I do have a few. I think the National Treasures soccer release is a W. I saw some really, really clean looking cards, some nice autos of Mbappe, which was really cool as Panini got that license and immediately put him in that product. So just seeing a National Treasures high quality product that was coming out with Messi, Ronaldo, Mbappe, all those guys is really fun to watch. I believe it was the run to the World Cup National Treasures release. And super, super cool looking, not a product that I can afford by any means, but a product that I'm definitely rooting for, especially after I talk about the issues that we've had in sports cards over the last couple of weeks, / months. I think National Treasure Soccer is a big win for the hobby in general. Seeing a actual Mbappe auto not come out of Leaf or something like that, it's super cool. I'm probably going to butcher the way that his name is pronounced. But
did you get Southern Soccer Idiot's name? He's going to come in and talk about National Treasure's Road to the World Cup.
I did not get him, but
I thought maybe he would come in and just absolutely kill you for talking about National Treasure's Road to the World Cup. Come on, SSI. Where are you?
Come on, man. My other win of the week is that I'm going to save that one for last. I think his name is Puig. So he was a Barcelona rookie, ends up coming to LA for the Galaxy, and is nasty, Paul. Like, I remember when I said that he was coming over to the Galaxy, we had talked about him previously in relation to how he was going to shape up in Barcelona alongside guys like Gavi and Ansu Fati, and we kind of felt like he was the odd man out, which he was, which is why he moves to LA as such a young player. And he could be a guy that's really, really divisive in the future on national teams. I believe he's in Spain. And so when you have a guy like that, he moves to LA, you're confused about what happens to him in the MLS for him. And then last night you just watched a masterclass. His team ended up losing, but man, like, the El Tráfico series in itself, LA versus LA in the playoffs, was something outstanding. When you have the Lakers and the Clippers less attended than a playoff soccer game in LA, like, that's just pretty sweet. I know it's like playoffs versus game one and all that kind of stuff. Super cool to watch. I saw some tweets that was like, maybe everyone's at the soccer game. So it's just like, that's like a weird narrative. But this guy is so, so good. I believe he's quickly going to make a move back to Europe. I don't think he stays at LA very long, but he has convinced me that this is a card worth grabbing. He's got Barcelona rookies, which make it even more appealing. So I think that was a win of the week for me. But Paul, biggest card I've ever purchased that I just really, I was like, I got to trust my system. I got to trust my, you know, like my vision and my stat, you know, like my stuff, my process. I went out in December of last year, and I bought an out of five Indy Rodriguez. Biggest card I've ever purchased. I bought it for $800 at the time. I know you guys are like, oh, okay, that definitely puts like Kendall in a box, which is fine.
Oh, that's big, man. That's big. Like, that's a lot of money to spend on one card.
So, and especially for a guy who like never made it above like high A, you know, and so bought this guy $800 out of five Indy Rodriguez Bowman Chrome Auto. The guy ends up popping off all season. I send it to PSA, comes back a PSA 10, my friend.
Yes, let's go. Cue the rock music.
Cue the rock music for sure, bro. Like, this could easily be a five-figure card, and which is really exciting for me personally. I'm definitely going to hold it until right before the right before spring training next year, because I think the Pirates will ask him to come to spring training. I think there'll be a lot of hype around him. He went from off the list of top 100 prospects to around 40 top 100 prospect. He's a catcher slash infielder slash outfielder slash he can do whatever, because the Pirates are going to want his bat in the lineup. One of the most electric dudes I've seen. Definitely just such a cool win for us. And but I think, which is a good question maybe to start off with, Lydon, what do I do with it? Like, how do I sell this? You're like, this isn't like a dollar Trent Grisham card that I sold on eBay today. Like, this is much different. Like, do I need to go make an LLC? And, you know, like, I don't even know. Like, how do I go about an asset like this moving? And maybe this is a good question for Fisher. But I don't know. It's just a new world for me, and I'm in it, and I love it, and it's super cool, and I'm waiting for it to come back. So,
good stuff. Good stuff.
Hey, Lydon, can you possibly move closer to your microphone?
How's this? You get my big head in here too?
Get your big head in there. Yeah. All right. Excited to hear what you have to say, my man.
For sure. Yeah, I'd be curious to hear Fisher's thoughts on this too. So my first thought was Golden. I figured Golden, one of the big auction houses, but probably PWCC of the two. Just they seem to have more of a market and attention. So that's what you're going to want right now is attention on that card. So I would probably lean PWCC to get the amount of bids and eyes on that card that you're looking to sell. Golden seems to have more of the memorabilia and some of the vintage cards, the high-end vintage cards. So just me personally, my thoughts on that, I'd lean PWCC for that card.
As you look at my nostrils, I was just going to pull up and you know, some sales data for Andy Rodriguez, you know, close to that card. Kendall, I assume you've done that. What have you found in the variety of like his out of 50s or his out of 25s?
Well, the hard part is like, I truly don't think there's another guy that's in Indy's like realm right now. Like, he's a guy that's just skyrocketed in attention, but also like he's playing better than almost any other minor leaguer. So, I mean, like you can't compare him to like a Fernando Tatis or like something like that, because he's not like a top five prospect in the game, but you also can't compare him to like, you know, a regular catching prospect either. So I think he's a hard comparison. I did talk to Chase Krim about it. I talked about it to him. I think there is an out of 25 currently on eBay for 10 grand right now. So I'm assuming that would go for about, I don't know, like 2 to 3. I think at the lowest I could get 8 grand for this Indy card. And I think on the high end, you know, it's maybe 15, 20K.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think that's what I was, you know, that's where my mind was. I don't see many sales on eBay that are related to this at all recently. But I'm checking 130 point right now because that's going to give us the data from Golden, Pristine, eBay, PWCC, and MySlabs. And I think this is a good process for everyone watching and listening. My thought is you could sell this on eBay or at a, I don't know, or at a show maybe. I don't know if I would go to a big auction house. That's just, this may be me personally. Because this is a timing play, right? Like you're going to sell this when he gets the call up to the bigs. Like that, that's the play, right? So if you go to an auction house, that kind of takes that away from you. You just got to sit there. I mean, just the logistics of that scares me with this play, unless you're going to do something else with it.
Yeah. When I talked to Chase Krim about it, he recommended that I sell it at a show.
Yeah, I like that.
That way I could either get trade value for it or I could, you know, get cash in hand for it. Taxes are all sorts of questions for me, you know, like how do you do that and all that kind of stuff. But anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't worry too much about the taxes. Like to me, that's pretty straightforward. You either file it as income on your tax return or you don't, and that's up to you. I mean, you will, if you sell a certain amount on eBay, they will send you essentially the equivalent of a 1099 form that you would need to file, because that means that they're filing it. But so the tax part to me is pretty straightforward, but I think it's more about like, do you get your money? Do you not get screwed over? What's the timing of the play? And I think if it's a typical prospect call up sell situation, I would go eBay or a card show, just depending on if you can get to a card show at that time. And is the card show big enough to have the audience that eBay has? I would rather take the fee hit on eBay or maybe MySlabs. Like you could list it on MySlabs, but I don't think you sell on MySlabs, but you could get on MySlabs and then throw it up there right before the call up and also list it on eBay. I've done that before. So I don't know, like it's a big card for sure. Like hopefully five figures, like let's get it. Let's get the five figures out of it. But, yeah, I don't know. The auction house thing I think you need to consider is like the timing. Cause I don't think ND Rodriguez is a guy that necessarily, like, I think he's a great call by you. I've invested in him. I'm going to flip him too. I'm going to sell my NDs like right when he gets called up. But I don't think he's like a generational talent that everybody knows about, like a Wander or a Julio, maybe like a J-Rod's a better example where like you're going to want to keep him for a while. If this was like a baseball equivalent to a Joe Burrow or a Justin Herbert, I'd go to an auction house potentially, but that's just my two cents. So, but let's get Leiden back involved here, right? So great win of the week, Kendall. Leiden, my question for you is, why is everyone freaking out? Why are all the content creators other than Kendall and I freaking out about the card market right now? Like, what am I missing?
I think they're missing, which Kendall and I talk about a lot in our alternative investing world, is they're missing that it's a market cycle. So one of the things we talk about a lot is that you have this thrill and euphoria moment at the top of a market cycle, which we saw in February 21, right? Cards went nuts, going for astronomical numbers. You had the Jordan rookie, for instance, went from 200 to 700K in a matter of a couple of days. That was wild. So just really awesome stuff on the top end. But on the bottom side, as prices go down, as you know, markets go down all across the board, you have the emotions of complacency, like people thinking, oh, I'll hold on to this. It's only down 20%. Maybe it'll pop up again. Then I'll get out, right? Well, then it goes down another 20%. Then they start to get a little scared. Then there's fear in the market. Then eventually, after usually a year or so, year and a half, you have this anger and depression stage, which we're seeing in sports cards, right? People are angry, they're depressed, trying to figure out what in the world is going on right now. Okay, what happened to my huge card that's now down 80%, right? What do I do now? So they're angry, they're depressed. And when you're in that kind of state, my wife's actually a mental health counselor, and one of the things we talk about is you are unable to make a rational decision when you're overcome by emotion, because it just, your body almost freezes up, right? That freezer flight scenario we talk about sometimes. And so people are just really concerned right now, are sports cards ever going to come back? right? They're angry, depressed, they're down the cards, maybe they haven't told their wife or their significant other. Okay, all these cards that we thought were going to pop off, now we're underwater, right? So what I enjoy talking about with people is it's a market cycle of roughly 3 years. If you want to look at sports cards, 3 to 3.5 years is the market cycle up. And then right now, I think it's bottomed personally. And so I'm looking to buy. It's bottomed, and then you'll have another cycle, 3, 3.5 years, we'll have to see, that cards will go up again. Because for me, and this would be a nice segue too, into vintage versus modern and so forth, I am looking at this as a long-term play, as in the trend for the next 8 to 10 years, I think, is up with sports cards. That's not saying you're going to have huge spikes, thrill euphoria moments, and then a crash. I'm not saying that. But overall, all those spikes and up, the trend is up for, I think, the next 8 to 10 years. And from fanatics coming in, there's billions of dollars fanatics have spent, collectors vault, or collectors coming in, buying PSAs, all these different billion-dollar transactions, to me, speaks to that the trend is up. Short-term, right, you got to figure out what you're doing, you know, risk management and so forth. But there's opportunity out there. When other people are fearful, that's the time to be greedy and to be buying up folks that are just trying to get rid of the cards right now because they're underwater. So I'll stop there for a few minutes.
Yeah, that's good stuff. I mean, Kendall, I'll let you chime in here. I definitely have some follow-up questions. It sounds like, Leiden, correct me if I'm wrong, my question related to the content seems to be that maybe I obviously have a different perspective than a lot of other people, and you provided a good perspective for me to realize, which is there are many people who bought cards in Q1 of 2021 and they have held those cards for the last 18 months and they are frustrated because those cards are down and they're waiting for those cards to go back up. And so there's potentially content creators creating content for those people. And so when I see that content, that sort of I consider clickbaity content, but really I might be wrong. It might actually be trying to help those people deal with the fact that they've held these cards and they're down. So it's like a what to do now type of content. Do you think you guys think maybe that's what some of the situation is that we're seeing with the content creators? So, Kendall, what's your take on some of the conversations we've had on the show about, like, if Leiden's correct and we're at kind of a bottom right now, and I like what he said about the micro trend, like the hype cycle sale moments spikes are still going to happen, which we talk about on the show a lot and Andy talks about too. But also that kind of in the background, long term, Leiden expects things to go up. That's great. What do you think that means for, like, how creative do people need to get then? Because remember we talked about that sports card investor video at the Oppenheim group where they're taking these data points from all these different places that just don't seem like they make sense to put together. And then they're creating this case for a video that's like buy vintage soccer cards, which just seems like way risky to me. And they make this case using just data from all these different places to kind of support this argument that they want to make sense, which I guess I get, but I guess if Leiden's saying the market's going to go up in the background of our hype spike moments for flippers, then how creative do we need to get? Can't we just go buy a 79 Wayne Gretzky and just let it go up?
Yeah, I think when, let me share this image here. This is what the market cycle of emotion, which is what Leiden is referring to. This is the chart with which that we communicate through quite a bit. It's something that's really helped me out over my investing portfolio in the past. I started investing as a college student. So I would invest like $50 a month. And that was like, you know, that was me really having to push for those 50 bucks, you know? And so I had to be really smart and patient with things. And as we were going through things, you know, I would feel these rides almost daily. You know, I would feel disbelief to euphoria, to panic, to, you know, depression, to disbelief again, almost daily sometimes, you know? And so I feel like we see this as well. These traits can be gone over to a sports card market. You know, this market cycle of emotion is still human nature. It's still an asset that ultimately you don't have full control over. You know, like, you're kind of putting your best foot forward, or you know, and doing your research and things, but ultimately this is a little bit outside of our control. And so you have like this market cycle of emotion that's a part of all that. So this is the, if you guys are listening, it's a Wall Street cheat sheet psychology of the market cycle. You can Google market cycle of emotions chart, and it has like a little all seeing eye in the top left. It's definitely some Illuminati going on. Just kidding. But so that's a resource that we use quite a bit. But I think what I'm wrestling with, Paul, is because like, I fully understand what you're talking about in terms of the ultra modern market is super interesting, and like for Paolo going from 400 to 2000, like that's a great run, and I think that's what everything is right in front of people. You know, like, we've definitely got an audience for sports cards now, and so I think the ultra modern is like people are trying to jump on the next hurdle, they're trying to get a part of the next player, you know, like, and prospecting has become such a big deal, especially in basketball or in baseball and soccer, like especially in there, like people are just like, if there's anyone with potential, they're just throwing hundreds of dollars at this, praying that it's the next, you know, 10x, and just like almost gambling in a way. But I think vintage is a different swing when you're looking at number of views involved, overall market cap, money into the hobby. When you're looking at Leiden has shared some statistics with me previously. We had another podcast that we did a couple months ago where he talked about the value of sports cards in 10 years and how the market cap is going to be pretty ridiculous when you look at the like the addition of Fanatics and all, just their email list alone could grow the hobby by the millions. So I'm going to get out of the way and ask him to kind of speak on that a little bit.
Yes, for sure. So in a word, I think we can look at a term you probably heard from more on the economics side of things, which is the word demographics. And so to me, you look at any sports card show right now, if you look at a sports card, if you look in the audience, right, there's a lot of young dudes. I don't see a lot of young girls right now. I'm sure we're working on that too. But I look at Sports Card Investor Show. His son is in the hobby with him, both his sons, actually. And what's really encouraging to me, if I'm looking at this from a long-term perspective, is that we have a young demographic coming into the hobby. And so I can hear all these stats and hear all this news of Fanatics coming in. Like, okay, that's fine. You see something, potentially make some money. But in the end, it's demographics and the young crowd coming in to keep pushing that new money into the market. We might joke sometimes the exit liquidity, right? If you're trying to get out of something, you want to have someone to come in and buy it at the top. And that's not what we have here. I was thinking about this before we jumped on, and the Star Wars phenomenon actually comes to mind as a correlation here. Is that you look at when Star Wars, The Force Awakens came out, it became the biggest domestic box office movie in the United States ever by a huge margin. And one of the reasons that happened is because you had grandparents, parents, and the children all going to see the same movie. You had demographics across the spectrum. You had all different age groups across the spectrum going to see that movie. I see the same thing happening with sports cards. You have my grandpa that's been in sports cards. My dad, as I mentioned, we started with sports cards, Cincinnati Reds, and then myself, and then people even younger than me, like I've mentioned. Sports cards have this unique 100-plus year hobby that's becoming an investment for some of us that we all enjoy. We all talk about how much fun it is. Sports card investor talks a lot about the entrepreneurial side of things, of how you can buy something at a lower price and sell it at a higher price. There's a lot of entrepreneurial lessons in sports cards that we can learn. And so to me, I look at those things as this is a huge potential that not only is there a trend here, we can jump into that trend, whether you're looking to do modern and do flipping, or you're looking to do vintage and long-term hold sort of thing. There's opportunity there because you have demographics, because you have these trends, that this thing to me is going to 10x over the next 8 to 10 years. The entire hobby, the entire market cap, and put in those terms, is going to 10x over the next 8 to 10 years, partly because Fanatics has such a huge customer base. I mean, their customer base alone, I think, is 7 times the size of the amount of people that is currently in sports cards. Roughly 3 to 3.5 million people are in sports cards right now. Fanatics can 6 to 7x that number with just their customer list alone, let alone all the different YouTube and all the different podcasts are going on to spread the word about the opportunity that is here. So when I hear all those different things and look at these long-term trends, which probably guess I like to look at 3 to 5 years out, if I'm going to jump into something, I don't make sure that I'm in it, that the odds are in my favor, so to speak. And I'm not jumping into something that's at the end of its cycle, that's on the downside. This thing is moving. It's moving quick. And I see a lot of opportunity in whatever type of area you want to hop in, whether it's modern or vintage. So,
yeah. So let me jump back in here because that's a lot of great information and exciting things that I don't disagree with. I guess my biggest question is, how do we apply this macro theory on an active basis right now? So for example, I'll use this couple conversations I've had recently offline with subscribers of nooffseason.com, and then a couple content examples that I've referenced already. The theme is basically, okay, I think you should dig deep and buy this vintage soccer. And I struggle with that kind of example because, and I hate to pick on that example, but it applies to like a ton of other pieces of information that I've heard that people are doing. What is the selling point? Like if it's a vintage soccer card, and the player's already passed away, what is going to make that card go up other than the market? So is it a play of like, buy any vintage soccer card for real and it's going to go up? I mean, maybe that's what you're saying and it's as easy as that. But if, or any vintage baseball or whatever, but in my mind, there has to be a marker. And so even for like a stock, you know, or a mutual fund, typically I don't know that much about that kind of investing, but my assumption is that, or even crypto, like you're not investing for something unless you think that there's a reason why it's going to go up. And so I understand the argument that the sports card market is going up. Like that's the whole reason why I'm invested in building out content on nooffseason.com. That's why I'm invested in building out content on the Sports Card Strategy Show. I'm banking on more and more people coming into the hobby as well, which helps our business, right? Not just the flipping and investing side, but like what I would love to dig into, maybe a little bit today or maybe in a future episode, have you back, is like, what cards specifically should people buy? Because I learned a lot of lessons over the last 2 years through action. And that's just how I learned. Different people are, you know, completely different in how they learn. I learned what not to buy, what to buy, what not to grade, what to grade, that kind of thing. And I think that's what makes you able to actually make money in the long term investing in flipping cards. So what I'd like to see in some of this content that I haven't seen yet, I hear macro theories. What are the actual action items that people should be taking? What cards to buy, I guess is what I'm asking, and what cards not to buy, because I think that's the kind of content that actually really helps people.
Sure. Yes, I'll dial it down here a little bit. So just give that broad picture. So I think what's going to translate to the individual here is what your individual goals are. So for me, I am not looking to be flipping modern per se. I do enjoy buying some modern, but much like Kendall, I'm looking to flip modern into vintage. But to speak to the individual right now, like what's actionable that you could use right now? And referring back to that market cycle plays out in the short term too. So rather than looking at something from 2017 to 2021 with that huge market cycle, there are many ones in between, which we saw with the Paolo Banchero card, right? $400 to $2,100. That's an actionable item. Figuring out what is the season coming up, what's the sports season coming up, and you guys are great at this. I've been listening to your content, you know, a couple of weeks now. You guys are great at identifying that top, that thrill and euphoria moment for any specific sport, because that's where the attention is going, and that's going to be the topping point to sell that card. But on the bottom side, you know, what is the opportunity before that sports season comes up? So an actionable item for people is figuring out, you know, for myself, I've not done this before, but I enjoy playing basketball, fantasy basketball. And I enjoy finding breakout stars, sleepers, you know, people that seem like they have potential but haven't gotten enough attention yet. And so something I've thought about is buying the people that I'm picking up in my fantasy team, buying their sports card, and then flipping it once they get the attention during the season. That's an idea for other people there. But you can play that market, whether you're modern flipper or vintage. You can play that, more so modern, definitely not vintage, but you can play that, what is the season coming up with a sports card, buying someone that's not well known and just flipping it for 40, 50%, sometimes a 2, 3, 4X. That's not as common. But you can play that in and out as much as you want in the short term as an actual item like that. Is that helpful?
Yes, but I think that's actually what we've talked about for the last year plus on this show, is that exact thing. Like that's what we dive into all the time. So what I'm actually asking is, from a vintage perspective, what vintage cards do you buy, and how do you, like, how, that's where I'm confused. That's where I don't know how to advise people. All day, every day, I can tell you why this specific player from whatever sport is going to have a moment this upcoming season. That's what everything at nooffseason.com is about. Everything on all of our shows is about all the time. What I'd like to gain more insight on is, like, why would I think that a Steve Yzerman or a Wayne Gretzky or a Isaiah Thomas card is going to go up for some reason? Or even, like, let's take it back even further than that. Let's talk about, like, Jim Brown and Carl Yastrzemski, and, like, I mean, why are those cards going to go up?
Yeah, Leiden, I think if I'll remind you of something that we chatted about one point, I think you shared with us, I believe it was you shared a stat with me at one point about how vintage sports cards, specifically baseball related, has beat the S&P 500 on inflation over the last 70 years, which is a unique thing, because when you look at like setting your money in a bank account and, like, just set it and forget it, or even in traditional IRAs and things, economically it's a real struggle right now when you're looking at interest rates and inflation and all that kind of stuff. How can you put your money in something that at the backside of when you pull it out is going to be worth more or even the same as when you put it in? And I think that is an interesting conversation as well in regards to vintage. Like, maybe it's not, hey, we're going to put our money into Gretzky 79 and watch it grow 10x over the next 10 years. But maybe it's just, I'm going to put my money in Gretzky rookie cards so that I don't lose money on inflation. You know, is it as simple as that? Or is there actually a deeper play even than that? You know, like, do you see, like, more heads getting into the hobby, eventually building the vintage market?
So it's a combination of all those. And just thank you, Kendall, for translating. I know this is a different conversation than the modern looking for the flip during the sports season. So I appreciate you doing some translation here. Because for me personally, I prefer to invest in vintage. I prefer to look at a longer term, 3 to 5 years, because I do more of what's called a swing trading mentality. So I am not looking to buy something and then flip it 3 to 5 days from now for 40, 50, 60% gain, which you can do. I'm not downplaying that by any means. Like, I'm a father. I have a lot of things on my plate. And so I like to look at what's a long-term trend. Look at the vintage market. That's where the big money's going to go. That's where people that are looking for value are going to go. That they don't have to think about it much. They just see the trend and they can sit and forget it mentality. But specifically for the art side of the conversation, to me, when I hear conversations of people that are buying this, what I plan to do from profits in other markets is I'm looking at this as art. I'm looking specifically at the pop count, the population of a card. So Wayne Gretzky isn't one that I'm particularly interested in buying, but Kobe Bryant is, specifically his Topps Chrome, that you look at that card, it did a 40 over a 3.5 year time period. I get excited about something like that as an alternative way to put my money to work, that I don't have to think about it per se. I know it's there, but over the long term, I expect it to go up. Just real quick here, I expect that card to be 150K over the next 3 to 5 years, and then 250K over the next 8 to 10 years. And there's a lot of math in that, and that's what I do is technical analysis and alternative investment. So that's how I'm coming up with those numbers. And so I look at that as I don't want to put a lot of time to this because I have a lot of other things that require my time of other investments. So I'm looking for something that is more of a sure thing, so to speak. I'm not concerned about the injury of a player. I'm not concerned about them doing something stupid in the news, which is relevant for modern too. If you're looking to flip it, you have to take those things into concern. Because my time frame is longer, I'm also considering those things. And so someone that's already passed away is a much safer play in that regard that I can sit and forget it for that perspective. But specifically for the pop count, the supply and then the demand for that card is something I look really closely at too, that I'm expecting, you know, fractionalization to have a bigger play as well in the long term for vintage cards. And so you fractionalize something like a Wilt Chamberlain rookie, but there's only a few hundred of them. Some there's only in like the 30s, but for Wilt Chamberlain rookie card. So I'm looking at those sort of things because I'm looking at a longer time frame. If somebody's looking at a shorter time frame, absolutely, these guys right here, these are your boys. Right, these guys are really on their game. Just as an example here, I'll close with this. The Zion rookie card that we've been talking about now, the last couple of weeks, Kendall mentioned around that $200 range as a good buying spot. And I think Paul piped in that he would be looking to sell that in the 250 range, right? 250, 300. Well, when I heard that, I thought, okay, I'm going to put some math to this. I'm going to put this on the charts, which I do, technical analysis. And I'm going to look for a spot that math-wise, what's the math saying is a good spot to sell it with, you know, psychological levels and so forth. And it came out to about 375. So typically we talk about you want to sell before that big psychological level, which Paul was spot on with that. Okay. So again, I'm looking at things from more math side, more long-term trend side, vintage side, that's safer play that I don't have to be concerned with someone's choices and the popularity that they have, right? It's also a popularity play, some of these players. So I don't have to be concerned with so much of that. And I'm just looking at the long-term trend that, again, it's the time that I've invested in this. So it's a little different strategy, I get it. But they both can work. Both can work, absolutely.
Yeah, two completely different strategies. I love your Kobe example because Kobe checks a lot of boxes for me in that he's not vintage yet. He's super relevant to probably anyone age 10 and older right now. So now you've got a whole other generation of people who will be interested in buying Kobe's cards. Let me ask you this. Can you break down the math? Like, what did you buy that card at, or what is that card worth now? How do you get to your projection generally that I think you said in X amount of years, it's going to go to 150K, and then in X amount of years, it's going to go to 250K. Could you actually break that down? Because that's exactly what I'm wanting to dig into right now.
Sure. So I didn't buy the card, full disclosure. I still have investments. I'm waiting for them to plan out. So just full disclosure there. I do want to buy a bunch of those. So on that. But this is where the technical analysis comes into it. So I'm in the crypto realm. And so I do technical analysis every day. And if you want to dig into something called Fibonacci numbers, you can dig into that too. But essentially, it goes up like that market cycle we showed earlier. That happens on the short-term time frame and the long-term time frame. And so when I was studying the Kobe card, and I looked at, okay, 2017 is kind of the starting point for this whole cycle that we recently had, and 2021 was the end. And so all I did is I took a chart to the top, the 45, 50K was roughly the top for that Kobe Tops Chrome. And then the bottom, I think it's like 4,500, 5 grand roughly, has been the bottom of that chart. And so I took those two numbers, and you can apply Fibonacci numbers to that. Again, you can go study this for yourself, and it will show you the different psychological levels, the different buying and selling pressure points up the scale, okay? So we gave the Zion example as a short-term pressure point, okay? But even the Zion card, I think that's a $1,200 to $1,400 card over the next 3 years if you're looking to hold it longer term. Okay, that's not one I particularly want to because the pop count's so high, you know, 20,000 PSA 10s. But that could be example of something that short term, you could probably sell it at 25. I would definitely sell it if you're looking to do short term, the next year or so. I would definitely, or 1 to 3 years, definitely sell that at the old time high of 45, 50K, because that's going to be a level that some people may have bought that at that level, right? And they'll be looking to sell it, okay? And be able to sell at that point. But all I'm doing is applying the technical analysis that I use in the crypto realm and just applying it to sports cards, because it's all numbers, right? And maybe that's for some people, like, how can you do that? It's a different market. Just go and study it and you'll see how the numbers work.
Yeah, I think I'm on the how can you do that? It's a completely different market. So I just want to clarify. So Kobe Bryant, 1996, Topps Chrome base, PSA 10, that's the card you're talking about, pop 833.
Yes.
Okay. Exactly. So this, you can, if you're not watching on my screen, basically I'm showing its trend over the last 365 days from marketmoversapp.com. And you can get your first month for only $1 by using the promo code NOOFFSEASON. But you can see here how it dips down to, it started at around just under 14,000, 13,500. And you can get it today. You should be able to get it today for around $6,000. That's its average sale. So, Leiden, I just want to make sure that we're being super clear for the audience. Are you saying this is the card that's going to get to be not only a six-figure card in the next 10 years, but $250,000 card in the next 10 years? That's based on the numbers?
Based on the numbers. That's long. Okay. That's looking at the overall trend. If something would happen with Fanatics or the sports card market in general, then I would be looking to get out of that card, you know, around the old all-time high of 45, 50K. I would not look to hold that for multiple years on end, because that to me becomes really risky, because the undercurrent, right, the rising tide raising all the ships is no longer raising all those ships. So again, that would be the risk for me. Is right now, I think it's easy. You point out Kobe's still relevant, even though he's passed away. He's still really relevant.
Super relevant. Right? So, I think it's a great example, by the way.
Yeah, exactly. It's a good middle ground, right? To moderate.
It's a great discussion, and I appreciate you bringing it up, because, like, again, and this is why Kendall and I wanted to have you on the show. I don't think this way, so I've been very outspoken about, like, this is what I'm afraid of. I'm afraid of spending $6,000 on a card and then waiting 10 years for it to either go down to like $1,000, which I think is more realistic actually than it becoming a six-figure card, but that's just me. I'm not looking at the math, so I could be totally wrong. I'm more comfortable buying a Zion card when he's injured back in April when nobody cares about Zion, or better yet, August when zero people care about basketball, and then selling it in November, which is like 4 months later, 3 or 4 months later, for like a 50% profit, and then just continuously repeating that kind of thing, to me is more money making. But it, I guess, yeah, it's a grind. Like, you do have to follow some things, but am I wrong? Like, I know that you absolutely put a lot of work and time into this. So can an argument be made that, like, are you putting as much time into figuring out what card to buy and then waiting on it as you are looking at markers? I don't know. You don't have to answer that. That's just hypothetical. I do love the example. I do think it's a great point on pop count. That's definitely something I would be looking at. Can you just answer, why are you confident that applying a model for crypto is relevant for sports cards?
So the model I'm applying is something that's used across all markets. The technical analysis, some of that has been used in the rice markets. It's been used to figure out what the price of rice is going to be in Japan. This, the Fibonacci numbers, we want to dig into that. This goes back to the 14th century. This is how you can measure. Think about conch shell. If there's a certain mathematical formula to that conch shell, it's just this Fibonacci numbers are built into nature. Okay, and so since they're built into nature, it plays out on a chart. It plays out in the pricing of any asset because it's built into us as human beings. So it's, this is totally different, right? I get that from the content that's typically on here. I get that. But that's, you see this play out across the spectrum. And as long as you can measure something, as long as you can measure the price of something, you will see these patterns play out in whatever asset you want to measure. Okay. And for this, since sports cards are new, I've really had to go around the block to try to get this kind of data to figure things out for myself. This is what I'm used to. So this is how I would apply it. But I've really had to go around the block to find this. And again, it might be much more risky for people that don't trust this, don't understand this. It's a totally different market. That's not going to apply. I get that. It might not be your thing. This is my thing. This is what I do.
Yeah, exactly. So that's a good point.
Right? I'm trusting my gut on this because this is what I'm comfortable with. At the same time, just a little deeper dive here in the vintage side of things, I am not buying. I love what Gary Vee talked about of the top 50 or the top 75 players in the NBA. That became his Bible for a while because he was looking at vintage cards of who to buy. Okay. I look at that list as well, and I am personally not looking to buy many players outside of the top 10 or 15. I think you get outside of the top 20 of that list if you're a vintage collector, and you're really starting to get risky because it's still an attention game. It's still how many people are going to pay attention to that player. For instance, Kevin Garnett is not somebody I'm looking to invest in because as great of a player as he is, maybe top 15, if I recall the list, he doesn't get a lot of attention in the sports card hobby. He's not an owner. He's not a sports cast or anything of that nature. Charles Barkley, on the other hand, from a vintage perspective, he's on TNT every night, right? When the basketball round. And so it becomes one of those things that if you're playing vintage, I'm not looking to buy number 49 or 50 in the top 50 for the NBA's most popular players in the vintage market. I'm looking for those higher plays that people know, but also have some sort of knowledge base, so to speak, in the modern sense of things in the media. Okay, does that make sense as well? Does that help?
Yeah, totally. I was thinking of Kevin Garnett, and I think you nailed that, and that's good advice. Hey, Kendall, real quick, I'm going to let you ask your question, but I'm going to get this one in from VJ because this is super relevant to me. This kind of goes along with VJ is making me think of something that I wanted to ask. So he says, how long have you been in the sports card market in reference to active time in the market? Basically, how many market cycles have you participated in? And so my question is not only that, if you guys could both answer that, that would be great. But also like this Fibonacci number algorithm that you're talking about, I assume we have enough data. We have a sample size of data that you're comfortable enough with. And like you said, this is what you do. I spoke about what I do. That's the great thing about sports card investing. Like we should all do. There's not a sports card market. There are a bunch of different ways to make money in sports cards. That's what I like to stand up and say to everyone. So this is a great conversation that I wanted to have on this show because I do my thing. Leiden's doing his thing. Kendall kind of does a mixture of both. So help me understand like two things. One, simple, how many market cycles for sports cards have each of you been in? Number two, I'm assuming that like the algorithm that you're using for crypto that you're using for sports cards, have you been through the same amount of market cycles for each of those? Are you concerned that maybe you haven't? Like maybe talk about that a little bit. Does that make sense?
Yeah. You jump in there, Kendall.
Yeah. I think one thing I'll say before I forget it is I think what you said about the attention and the top 15 in the NBA all time, that's so hard for me because my other side of an investing is going to find the guys that have no attention and getting them before they get into the attention. And so I'm having to completely flip my process of how I'm thinking about my dollars being used for a vintage market and invest in a guy who's going to constantly have attention rather than I hope he never has attention until the idea where I can put it on eBay and everyone knows about it, you know, like. And so I think that's another thing with what Paul is discussing is our mentality of the attention. And I'm so good that you brought up that, or I'm so happy that you brought that up in reference to the attention economy and things like that, in reference to the vintage. But I, as an investor, I believe I've been through two market cycles. But I think it's a definition of when one started and ended that's a little blurry. As a collector, I have been in more than two, but as an investor, I've been in with two. And in reference to other asset classes, I think maybe an overall economic trend, probably two as well, but that one's a lot more broad in terms of years. So I don't know. I would be curious to how you would answer that, Lydon.
Sure. So just straight to the numbers, three market cycles in crypto, probably four to five in the stock market, two to three in the real estate realm. I actually bought my first house during the 2008-2009 boom and then watched the market crash. I experienced that one firsthand. So that was that kind of started this whole process of what I'm talking to you about now, is understanding how a market cycle works and when to buy and sell any asset, let alone sports cards, okay? And then the sports cards specifically, late 2019, early 2020, right before COVID hit, I was starting to dive into sports cards, figuring out, okay, why is this valuable? Why are some of these things more valuable than when I first saw them, okay? I started in sports cards. You know, before that, I guess you'd say another market cycle was late 1990s, early 2000s. That was when I was moving was in high school with my dad, okay, my brothers, investing there. So I've been around a long time. I haven't been around the market cycle for that in the sports cars realm, right? You're not able to measure that if you want to put in economic terms like that. But I've certainly been around enough that for me personally, again, this might not be for everybody, but for me personally, I feel comfortable starting to apply some of the things I've learned in the stock and crypto world to the pricing of a sports card that, again, I'm looking more vintage. I'm not looking as much modern, but I can definitely see how I could flip for 30-40% if I wanted to put my time there because of the way the sports card cycles work and sports seasons work. So that makes sense?
Yeah, totally. Kendall, anything else you guys want to talk about in the next couple minutes? We're going to wrap up here in a few minutes. So maybe this is your time where you normally say something about FC Cincinnati, but since you already talked about MLS today, maybe.
Yeah, I think there is MLS Chrome coming out, by the way, next week. So that can be in the Topps Chrome MLS. Maybe they won't botch that release. But I think, Lydon, if you could, for me, maybe take a player from each sport in the vintage market for our viewers. You know, we have guys that are in football, basketball, baseball, hockey, soccer, etc. F1. What potential player would you look at investing in each of those markets?
Good question. I'll start with basketball, first one to come to mind. I would look at Julius Erving's 72 Topps rookie card. Specifically, I want to go, and most of these are going to be PSA 8 or above. That's something else to consider. I'm not looking to buy five.
PSA 8? Is that what you said?
PSA 8 or above because that's where the pop count, lower pop count comes into play. Okay, you want to really keep that in mind. And yeah, that's what's most desirable, right? People want to go flip up to that higher level. In soccer, I'd be looking at Maradona. That's a name that he's up there with Pele, right? He's one of the greatest soccer players of all time, but he doesn't quite get the same attention yet, I think, as Pele does with some of his cards. So Maradona is one that I personally want to invest in from a vintage side of things in soccer. And Let's see, baseball. Baseball's a little trickier. Who? Let's see. I'd go Jackie Robinson, actually.
Ooh.
Yeah. Jack, I mean, that's a safe play. I get it. It's not, you know, diamond in the rough per se. But again, I think that's one that specifically 53, 54, 55, Tops or Bowman is something I'm looking at. The 52 Tops gets a lot of attention, right? It gets a lot of the hype. But as people start to see other plays in vintage that are still really low pop in that PSA 8 range, you can get a lot of potential, I think, there long-term, that it's going to be a safe play. It's not going to go down in value, but it has the potential to go up in value as the rest of the market goes up. And then, let's say, football, Johnny Unitas, I think, is a really safe play. You know, Colts legend, well-respected across the spectrum there. It's actually one that my brother, when he got into sports cards with me recently, that's the name that he first went to from the vintage market. Unitas. That's one that he gravitated towards that he grew up with. So there's a couple of examples for you.
Nice.
Love that. Great insights. Lydon, great having you on. Good to have a smart person on the show other than Kendall to break things down. Very, very curious to hear what the audience reaction is going to be to today's episode. Please leave us a comment, a question. Let us know how you think we did. In the comments section, if you're listening on Apple or Spotify, tweet at No Offseason Card or tweet at Lefty McKee. Let us know how you did. Check out nooffseason.com if you want to get a free year premium to learn how to do the one kind of sports card investing, which is basically how to make money over the next 12 months. Email me at paul@nooffseason.com and I will hook you up with a free year of nooffseason.com premium, the sports card investment report. For those of you who are already members, I'm going to hook you up with something else. So still email me. I do want to report on some breaking news. Oh My Shoes made an amazing play. He traded his shoes for a Kobe Kaboom PSA 10, which Lydon likes. That is a great play. I agree. I like that one as well. Everybody, thanks again so much for watching and listening to the Sports Card Strategy Show. Kendall, before you say what you need to say, I'm going to put up, this is the graphic I meant to put up at the beginning of episode 52. I found it and put it up. I apologize to everyone for all the technical difficulties, especially to Lydon, because this is his real first exposure to the show. And Lydon, we'd love to have you back. Really appreciate your time. Kendall, do you have something you want to say?
I think we know what I can. Kill rock music!